Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Andrew Perloff here in New York. Maggie at the home studio. Big college football weekend coming up. Georgia, Alabama. I cannot wait. Georgia's 2-point favorite right now, Maggie. Interesting. This could be one of the closest games. Of course, if you have not had a chance, you could weigh in on our great debate today. Who had the best freshman season in college football history? This, by the way, Maggie, this poll, we put up a poll with our choices. It is close. I feel like my guy Herschel Walker is going to win it eventually. I'm not sure your person, Trevor Lawrence, is going to come away from this. Because I think people are, you know, it's recency bias. He struggled on Monday night.
Listen, I get it. Your pick of Herschel Walker, you know, EJ picking Adrian Peterson, Nico picking Johnny Manziel. I understand. But let's forget what Trevor Lawrence did on Monday night against Buffalo, which was absolutely nothing. And let's remember what it was like, the magic of him as a freshman at Clemson beating Alabama. Like, this was an amazing freshman season. It's just getting lost now because Lawrence has been disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, when's the last time Herschel Walker had a negative headline? I feel like Herschel is the guy. Johnny Football, of course, has a documentary, but this has been a lot of fun. You know, there's a guy, I got a tweet that we really should put a Ron Dayne of Wisconsin there.
Yep.
Great running back. You know, the thing about Ron Dayne is all his years were remarkable. I think you have to distinguish between great numbers and great freshman years. Like, we won titles, Maggie. Like, you and I should be the front runners on this. Johnny Manziel never won a title. And by the way, some good freshmen this year as well.
Yeah, but the thing, like, I get, the Johnny Manziel is a fantastic selection by Nico, because Johnny Manziel became like a cultural thing, right? Like, Dylan Raiola right now, he's kind of doing this weird Patrick Mahomes impersonation, but if Raiola was not doing that, I think he could actually have a bit of a cultural moment too, because anyone who could bring Nebraska back, or anytime you revive one of these, like what's going on in Colorado right now with Shador and Travis Hunter, and these guys are not freshmen, obviously, but when you can revive a college football program and we can look at you and say you were the turning point. We haven't talked seriously about Nebraska in a long, long time. And Raiola has made them very interesting and very, you know, made them relevant again. So he has a chance there. Like Manziel, who was like Johnny Football was the biggest story in football for a while.
Yeah, the question, I think one issue with Raiola that we don't know yet is he as good as some of the other freshman core. I mean, like, he's good. Don't get me wrong.
Is
he Caleb Williams? I mean, I don't quite think so. Is he Trevor Lawrence?
Well,
probably.
I don't want to go against my own poll.
But
my own great debate.
Well, that's the thing with Raiola. Who was the guest the other day who said he's very, very good, but not generational? I think that's interesting just watching him this weekend. Like, Caleb, do you remember when Caleb Williams came in as a freshman and was really, like, fully ready to go? I think that is the standard that you're putting Dylan Raiola, because he's the number one recruit. You know, he's not going to be on this list, Mac. No Arch Manning, although he felt like, do we count this as his freshman year? Like, what's the deal there?
No. Arch, believe me, Arch is going to have his time. I'm still not convinced that Arch is ever giving up this starting spot. I know Quinn Ewers, phenomenal quarterback. I get it. He's going to be in our lives for a long time. But I think Arch is very unique. He's not just like any regular backup who's sitting there keeping the seat warm for the starter to come back.
Well, he is. You know, I think he's classified as a freshman. He only played 2 games last year.
Which is funny, though, because do you remember in the college football playoff where he was in uniform on the sideline?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, the thing about Arch is he's not going to need that extra year because he'll be in the pros.
Right.
But he technically could be a freshman. That's a problem. Like, that's why you and I win this poll, because it should be true freshmen. And Bogus is like, well, why did you tell us that in advance? Well, that's kind of gamesmanship you need here on the Maggie and Perloff Show to win the great debate. By the way, you know what's sitting here, Mag, right now? A giant bag of breakfast food.
Finally, Perloff pays his debt.
Well, I haven't paid for it yet. I have to Venmo EJ. There is some question about whether or not I won or lost the bet.
No, you lost. That's why you had to pay.
New numbers are out. Yes, according to Barrett Sports Media, the game, the bet, of course, was will the Fever playoff game on Sunday afternoon at 3:00 on ABC reach 2 million viewers? It averaged 1.8 million viewers. it peaked at 2.2 million viewers. Therefore, 2 million people did watch a game. I'm having Nico, who's on the other side of glass, pull the original audio of the bet. There might be an out here. I might have to litigate this further.
No, and we never said peak. You never said peak. And you should start referring to them as Caitlin Clark's Indiana Fever so people are fully aware of why we're talking yeah. about the rating and why it might matter. But no, Perloff, we said, will they get a 2 million people rating going up against the NFL? And we never said anything about peak. The average rating was 1.8. You're buying breakfast. By the way, still a great rating for the WNBA. It's awesome, but you didn't win.
Well, it's up 330% from the same game last year. Okay, time to talk some college football. Again, Alabama, Georgia this weekend. So we're so thrilled to talk to Damian Harris. You can see him every Saturday at 9 a.m. CBS Sports HQ's college football pregame show. Damian, how you doing?
Good morning. I'm great. How you guys doing?
Good. So we have a great debate here on the show. Every Wednesday we do this, and today we're doing the greatest freshman year in college football history. Now, I know you're a student of history as well. When I say greatest freshman, what's that first name that comes into your mind?
Well, right now, Ryan Williams. I'm not going to lie. He's hot. He is hot like lava. So, I mean, the first person that jumps on my mind, yeah. because, again, this is a business where people think, what can you do for me now? What are you doing for me right now? And right now, Ryan Williams is the hottest freshman I think we've seen in a while. So that would be just off the top of my head, without giving it too much thought. Yeah. You guys got me off the cuff early yeah. this morning. But without giving it too much thought, I would go Ryan Williams right
but
now.
But he's 17. Is that right? Is that a typo?
Yeah.
How is he doing this?
I'm trying to figure it out. I think these kids are just getting more talented, more athletic, faster, more skilled than they were when I was his age. You know, when I was 17, you know, granted, I was good and I was highly recruited out of high school, but I wasn't ready to just step on the field and automatically be probably the second best player on Alabama's offense. So it's hard to explain, but I'm telling you, it's something in the water. These kids are getting more talented as the years go by.
Damian Harris is joining us, of course, national champion with Alabama. We're thrilled now that you're in the media, Damian. This is awesome. We get to pick your brain, especially before these massive games. And when you have Alabama, Georgia, you are part of one of maybe the most memorable, one of the greatest college football games perhaps of all time against Georgia, where Jalen Hurts gets benched for Tua. The legend of Tua like began there, and you were on the field for all of that. I mean, what do you remember about that incredibly special night for you?
I remember every second of that moment. I mean, again, like you said, obviously outside of the Jalen and Tua situation, that was just one of the most memorable endings to the greatest game in the season in college football. So I remember every detail very vividly. I remember we were getting tossed around by Georgia. I mean, we couldn't really do anything. We couldn't stop them. We couldn't score. We couldn't really do anything. And, you know, I want to clarify something all these years later. I don't think that was because of Jalen. I don't think that was because his lack of ability, because of anything like that. I think that Georgia is a good team. Obviously, they're coached by Kirby, who right now is one of the best coaches in college football. So I think they just had a really good plan for Jalen in that game. And I think that it just took a switch from us to kind of rejuvenate our offense because they were really shutting down everything that we had going. So, you know, the first half, we were struggling a lot. And again, nobody was blaming Jalen. Nobody was thinking, oh, well, this is his fault or anything. But once we got into halftime, there were rumblings that Coach Saban was going to start two in the second half. And so then everybody was just kind of, we were just kind of like everybody else would have been, you know, the fans sitting at home. Cause I'm sure when people heard that at home, when people saw Tua come out, everybody was like, wait, whoa, what's going on? Like, this is crazy. We're switching quarterbacks at halftime. Like, well, the players felt the same way because Jalen had been our starter all year. He had been our guy. And unless we were up by 50 or 60 points, you know, Tua was, he was just a backup. And so once that happened, we were all just kind of like, all right, well, we don't know what's going to happen, but at the end of the day, we got a game to win. So whoever is going to be on board, whoever those 11 guys are on the field, whether it's offense, defense, special teams, you know, those got to be the best 11 guys. And so if that's what Coach Saban thinks is going to give us the best chance to be successful, then that's what we're going to go with. And I remember very, very vividly whenever, because we got the ball to start the second half. And I remember before Tua even called the play, we were in the huddle and he got on a knee and he looked all of us in our face mask right in our eyes and was like, we're going to win this game. I don't care what we got to do. I don't care if the burden is on me. I don't care if the burden is on you. I don't care who it's on, but we're going to win this game. We broke the huddle and then He damn sure won us that game. So yeah, it was a crazy moment. And again, going back to Jalen, I think that what is incredible, or what's important to note, is just how incredibly he handled that situation and how incredibly he handled the transition. I mean, even if you go back and watch the tape of, you know, what happened after that play, like Jalen was one of the first guys that ran on the field celebrating. He was happy as could be. And, you know, he handled it with class, with maturity, and with leadership. And, you know, for a starting quarterback to have been as successful as Jalen, to have to go through that, to have that kind of leadership and show that he only cared about the team, you know, that resonates with when he went to Oklahoma and now how he's doing with the Eagles. Like, I think that all speaks to the character of Jalen.
So just to revisit this, Coach Saban didn't tell you anything during the week. You really didn't know. And you couldn't tell via the way they were practicing, there was nothing there?
No, there was absolutely nothing going into that week saying, okay, well, if we don't do well on offense, we might make a quarterback change. Like, I know that right now that two quarterback system is starting to get popular, and teams are starting to get away from guys in certain situations. Like, oh, well, if this guy isn't playing well, let's throw the backup in, see if we can get a new spark. That wasn't how we operated. Like, we had our starters, we had our backups, and that was the way it was. So there was no indication going into that game that that was a possibility. And that's why, like I said, whenever we got the news, we were all just kind of like, oh, okay, all right, here we go. You know,
you played in some really big games. Damian Harris is joining us. He's part of CBS Sports HQ pregame show on Saturdays at 9 a.m. And doing that transition from playing days into the media, Damian, we know that some of your former coaches and teammates are also making that same switch. I'll ask you about that in a minute. But as far as this Alabama-Georgia game coming up this Saturday, it's going to be a great one. What have you learned about Jalen Milroe in this season, and how does he crack yet another Georgia defense that is stifling?
Well, he's an unbelievable athlete, and I think it's important to note he's become a much better passer than what people thought that he was going to be. And I think that he's already exceeded expectations with his arm talent, with his ability to throw the ball. It definitely helps when you've got guys like Ryan Williams who are always open and always in the end zone. But Jalen Milroe has shown so much improvement in the pocket, staying in the pocket, not always looking to run, using his arm, hitting the big plays, but also taking the checkdowns, taking the profits. He's not turning the ball over. He's running the ball efficiently. He's become much more sure with the ball in his hands. I know, you know, the past couple of years he's had a little bit of trouble holding on to the ball, as well as, you know, obviously throwing interceptions. But, you know, he's cleaned all that up. He's become a much more efficient runner. He's become a much more efficient passer. And I think that shows. I mean, he's rattling off stat lines where he's throwing for three touchdowns, running for two touchdowns, probably close to 300 passing yards, 100 rushing yards, and no turnovers. I mean, when you can play that efficiently, but also take care of the football and not give the ball back to the other team and keep the possession with your offense, I mean, you can't really ask for much more for a quarterback. Jalen Milroe is obviously the leader of this team. I think that him and Kalen DeBoer's relationship is phenomenal. I mean, you see them at basketball games. You see them hanging out in the offseason. And, you know, now that the season has started, you can see how that chemistry, how that relationship is helping them be so successful. You know, Kalen DeBoer has a great track record of putting quarterbacks in a situation to be successful. And I think that that's showing with how Milroe is continuing to progress, obviously as a runner, but definitely as a passer.
Talking to former Alabama star, former New England Patriot, Damian Harris. Damian, this game is a huge game. Obviously, you don't get bigger than this, but it's different than when you were playing because of the 12-team playoff. Does the game mean anything less because there's a great chance both teams will be there?
No, absolutely not. Because, you know, this is my problem with the 12-team playoff is you start talking about teams like Alabama and Georgia in the same breath that we're talking about a potential Notre Dame or a potential Michigan right now, right? Alabama and Georgia are the two of the best teams in college football, and they both know that they have a pretty darn good chance of making it to the playoffs, whether it's 4-team or 12-team. With that being said, these are two Titan programs. This is, granted, Nick Saban is gone, but this is the program, the legacy that he left, that Kalen DeBoer is now putting his touch on versus Kirby Smart and the Alabama that he's tried to build at Georgia. So this is a clash of titans. This isn't, oh, well, there's 12-team playoff implications. Oh, well, we want to impress the committee. We want style points, like Ryan Day was saying. No, this is two of the giants in college football, not just this year, but in years past. So at the end of the day, these two teams are looking at each other like, We're two heavyweight boxers. Two men step in, one walk out. That's the end of the story. So yeah, I don't think this 12-team playoff has too much implication for this game because again, the stakes in this game are high enough. Kirby Smart talking about, oh, well, they weren't what they used to be. Nick Saban talking about, granted, this was years ago when I was playing, but you know, we got to make this personal. They said this, they want to take what's ours, they want to be who we are and what we want to be. That makes this stuff personal. Go out there and make it personal and win this game. You know, people have heard the intensity. People have seen what these programs bring to the table. And at the end of the day, it's about proving who is the better team, not who's going to make it to the 12-team playoff, what ranking, what seed. No, this is about who is the best team in the SEC right now. Obviously, outside of Texas. I got Texas as my top team in the SEC right now, but obviously, if I'm Alabama, I think I'm the best team in the SEC. If I'm Georgia, I think I'm the best team in the SEC. So this is almost a mini SEC championship before the actual big game.
Damian Harris is joining us. You know, won a national championship at Alabama. I'm not even going to ask you who you're picking.
Hold on,
this game.
I won two national championships. I won two of them things.
I'm not even going to ask you who you're picking in this game because that would be a waste of time. We know that you're going to ride with the Crimson Tide, of course. But
every time.
Of course. I do want to ask you, though, about. You said it's like a heavyweight match, and with the college football playoff now being 12 teams, you don't want that to water down, you know, what it means for these two incredible college football teams to meet in the regular season. How is facing Georgia, though? Is it different than facing LSU? Is it different than facing Auburn, obviously, who you have this amazing rivalry with that goes back for generations? I mean, how is it different for Alabama to play Georgia? Why is it different?
I really don't think it's different at all because when you look back the past couple of years, it's been Alabama, Georgia in the national championship, Alabama, Georgia in the SEC championship, Alabama, Georgia. Even whenever it was my freshman year and we played in Athens, I mean, that was a huge game. We were bumping and fighting before, you know, during pregame warmups. And this is, even though Alabama and Georgia don't play each other that often in the regular season, it boils down usually to the SEC or the national championship. But these, like I said, these are two teams who have such historic, well, who have such, I'm trying to think of the word, such
like rich history?
They're so rich in history. Yes, they're so rich in history. And every year they develop the best players. They've got some of the most talented players in the country. Obviously, in recent years, they've had two of the best coaches in college football. So, again, like I said, whenever we play LSU or whenever we play whoever in the SEC, we know it's going to be good on good. It's going to be good players against good players, good coaches versus good coaches. We're going to have to play our best because the team that we're lining up against is going to give us their absolute best. So to me, I don't see this game any differently. It's just an old-fashioned heavyweight fight, like I just said, between two powerhouses in Alabama and Georgia. Two great coaches, great quarterbacks, great skill players, great defenses. It's just about who's the better team, who's going to show up, who's going to play better, who's going to hit the other guy more times and not let them get up off the mat. I mean, that's what it is. That's what heavyweight fights are about.
Damian, we want to get in your former coach. I have to ask one more Alabama question because I think when you look at your roster, the final championship year, it's pre-transfer portal. So Alabama and Georgia could go six deep. What was it like? I'm looking at the depth chart. You had behind you at running back Bo Scarborough, Najee Harris, Josh Jacobs, and Brian Robinson Jr. Now you see all these guys on Sunday. Then your wide receiver room was Calvin Ridley, Jerry Judy, Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith. I mean, what was practice like? What was it like to be a defensive player against a third team there?
Practice was intense. If there's anything I remember from my time in Alabama, is practices were definitely more intense than the games. And I know people always say, yeah, you want to make practice situations more amplified. That way in the game, you can handle any situation. Well, I don't even think that, I mean, obviously Coach Saban tried to do that, but the fact that there was a five-star at every single position, and then there was another five-star behind them at every single position, and then there was another potential five-star, if anything, a 4.5-star behind them, third string. So imagine the practices when we would go periods when it's good on good, right? So it's our starting offense, like you just said, me, Jalen Ertua, Calvin, Smitty, Ruggs, and then on defense, you've got Reuben Foster, you've got Marlon Humphrey, you've got Minkah Fitzpatrick, Deron Payne. Like, this, I mean, imagine how, and then all obviously, not only were we five stars, we knew we were five stars, we knew we were good. So imagine the intensity that brings in practice, right? Imagine how amplified that would be, right? And then you think about it. So then when we would go, okay, like one offense versus scout team defense, well, there's still 4 and 5 stars on the scout team defense. So they're making plays, they're making picks, they're talking trash because they want to be running with the ones. So now they're pissing us off because they're screwing up our practice. Now we're getting all mad. And it's just because there was so much competition. There was so much competitiveness. Hell, even in the running back room, I actually just did a hit with CBS yesterday where they had asked me, like, give me a funny story about your time in 2017, whenever you were playing with all of these great running backs. Like, give me a funny story. And I talk about there was a time, it was before we played Auburn in 2017. It was a Friday. We had our little Friday walkthrough before we showered up, got on the bus and everything. And Coach Saban had yelled for Harris to get in. Obviously, there's me, Damian Harris, and there's Najee Harris. So we both run out on the field. And so I'm thinking, this young kid ain't finna take my reps. And he's thinking, I ain't finna let this old guy keep taking all these reps. I'm next up. I'm hot. I'm finna take over this room, right? We run on the field. We're arguing. We're bickering. We're yada, yada, yada. Coach Saban obviously throws us off the field, screaming, hollering at us. Then what do? We go to the sideline. We start arguing more. We start pushing and shoving. We mess up the whole walkthrough. But again, you know, obviously that's a funny, silly story, but that just shows how competitive we were. Like, regardless of if it was running back, tight end, DB, defensive lineman, you had to maximize every play, every rep, every practice, like everything you had to maximize, because me, if I knew if I didn't, somebody was going to come and take my job. Or if I was Najee, I knew if I didn't do what I needed to do, I wasn't going to have a chance to get on the field because there were guys in front of me that were 5 stars doing the right thing. So it was incredible. It was incredibly competitive. But we took all that energy that we built up, all that competitive energy from Monday through Thursday and Friday. And then on Saturday, we just unleashed it on the other team.
Damian, I mean, it was amazing to watch you at Alabama. And now if you had a room like that, 3 of the guys would probably just transfer and we wouldn't have great stories like that anymore of all these incredible competitions. All right, we'll have to get you back on another time to talk about, I want your take. Your Travis Hunter take was unbelievable. You said that he's already a top 5 most impactful.
I'm willing to double down on it.
Well, let's just do it right now. We have 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Two seconds here. She said Travis Hunter is already one of the top 5, should be in the pantheon of top 5, like, great college football players of all time. You know what it takes to make it at the pro level. Should he play both ways when he gets to the NFL? Can he play offense and defense?
Well, he says he can. And he said he told us that he could do this at a high level, playing snap after snap after snap, playing 160 snaps almost. He told us that he could do this. Now, what is he saying? I want to do this at the next level. So until I see otherwise, I believe this kid because he is doing it at such a high level. Every game, you can depend on him to go. If you throw the ball to him enough, he's going to get you 100 yards. He'll get you a touchdown or two. And then now, it's not just that he's making big plays on defense. One thing that's really stood out to me is his coverage is a lot better. I felt like last year, he was making a lot of highlight picks. He was making highlight plays, but his coverage was hidden from the fact that he was making big plays. Well, this year he's covering, he's clearly tackling, winning games, biting the ball, knocking the ball off of guys, which, let me put something into perspective. As a running back, if I ever have the ball on the 1-yard line and I see a corner, I swear to you guys, there is not one cornerback that has ever played the game of football that I would say could stop me on the 1-yard line. Travis Hunter knows that. He knows that corners have that stigma. And what does he say? I know guys think I'm not going to tackle. I know guys think I'm just a corner. I don't want to get my nose dirty. And what does he do? He pops the ball out and wins him the game after having 100 yards receiving, after playing over 80 snaps on offense, after playing 80 snaps on defense. So when we talk about the all-time greats of college football, we talk about Cam Newton. We talk about Barry Sanders. We talk about, you know, Johnny Football. They've transcended the game of football, but they did it at one position. They did it playing half the snaps that Travis Hunter is doing. So again, when you look at his offensive production, his catch radius, if you get the ball anywhere within 3-4 yards of him, he's more than likely going to catch it. You turn on his defensive tape, he's strapping guys. He's not letting guys create separation. And he's creating turnovers by getting picks, forcing fumbles, winning the games. I mean, you have to look at what he's doing on both sides of the ball, how impressive it is on both sides of the ball. And then whenever you put all that together, There's not, like, I can't name five guys that have done things that are more impressive than what he's doing on both sides of the ball, playing 160 snaps every single weekend.
Damian, you sound like you're ready to put on the pads on Saturday. I don't want to. I would not want to watch a game with you. I can tell you right now, you might punch the guy next to you if there's a big play.
I'll tell you this. My wife does not enjoy watching games.
I can tell why, but it's great to talk to you. We have to get you back on. We have to talk Bill Belichick. We have so many more questions. Mm-hmm. But good luck on Saturday. Again, Saturday, 9 a.m., CBS Sports HQ's college football pregame show. Thank you, Damian.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time.
Oh, my God. Now I'm fired up. I cannot wait till Saturday night. Maggie, this is going to be so fun. That was awesome.
I know. I mean, telling these great stories about Alabama, telling great stories about Nick Saban. I mean, how funny is that? He says, Harris, get in there. And he's not sure if it's Damian Harris or Najee Harris. Like, you got two good options right there.
Yeah, that's two good Harrises. All right. We'll be right back. More college football debate on the Maggie and Perloff Show. Back on Maggie and Perloff. We ran a little late there with Damian Harris, former Alabama running back, former New England Patriot. He was great. I mean, what? Take you back. It feels like a long time ago, though. 2017, not that long ago. Before the transfer portal, you could stack about seven pros at every position, and that's what Alabama and Georgia used to do. I think it's going to be great. I mean, Maggie, have you had a guest like that who you felt like could have jumped out of your screen and put on shoulder pads and played today like that? He's ready to go.
He was great, and great memory. It wasn't that long ago, but all those stories from Alabama, of all the former Patriots, and also Damian Harris did play for my Buffalo Bills last year, but of all of the former Patriots who have entered the media over the last year, Belichick, Brady, Damian Harris is by far the best one. Yeah. It's not even close. He's better than Belichick. He's more polished than Brady.
Gronk doesn't say anything. Edelman's pretty good. Gronk does not say anything. I do like Gronk, though. All right, let's get the headlines. Running late here, Andrew Bogus, hit us.
The Houston Astros began this season 7-19. In June, they were still 10 games behind the first-place Mariners. This morning, they are AL West champs again after last night's 4-3 win over Seattle. How'd you do it, Alex Bregman?
We had to grind for it all year long. The guys just put their head down, never stopped believing, and kept faith and kept going.
This is their fourth straight division title, seventh in 8 years. The loss leaves the Mariners 2.5 games behind the Tigers for the last AL wild card. The Royals currently on the second one, winning a tie with Detroit after a 1-0 win in 10 in Washington. The Orioles clinching at least a wild card with a 5-3 win at Yankee Stadium that also prevented the Bombers from winning the East. Over in the NL, the Padres clinching a spot with a 4-2 win at Dodger Stadium. That game ending on a triple play. The Mets losing in Atlanta 5-1, while the Diamondbacks took an 11-0 beating from the Giants. So the Mets remain in the second wild card spot, a half game up on Arizona, who's a half game up on Atlanta. And the A's began their final series in Oakland with a 5-4 walk-off win over the Rangers. Over 30,000 fans were there chanting "sell the team" and taking things home with them like their actual seats. Antonio Pierce.
Do they have sewage on them? Make sure those seats are clean.
I think they were easily detachable because they're rotted at the bottom. Yeah. It's one little tug and they came home with you.
Is there some kind of like possum attached? Aren't there possums living in the visiting radio booth that at stadium?
Yeah.
But they've got two games to go. Like, there might not be enough seats for a sellout crowd in their last game, which is the
Don't
expectation.
Worry. There'll be enough. There's always seats available at that stadium.
I saw a story that the ownership in the front office was telling all the players and coaches, like, whatever you do, leave the field immediately after the last game.
Yeah.
Immediately. They don't want you saying thank you. They don't want you trying to take pictures with fans or bring your family. Like, I guess most people would go saying farewell to a city. They're worried that people are going to run on the field, do crazy stuff. They don't want you staying around the ballpark after, talk to fans outside the ballpark. Like, it's kind of wild.
Yeah, apparently the Rangers, the visiting team, got a full rundown from their security people on how to handle anything that might happen.
Wow.
Like, people doing something worse than just running on the field and ripping up grass. Like, they're prepared. I guess they know how to get off the field if they have to in a hurry. All that kind of stuff. Because no one knows what people are going to do over these 2 days.
Man, I'd love to give like fans like us, because obviously that's how we all started here. We're not professional athletes or former athletes, so we're fans first. And I'd love to give fans more credit than that. But I feel like I understand. I'm not advocating for it, but I understand the anger because you're getting gaslit by the owner who writes a thank you to the fans letter that was full of BS. And so, yeah, you probably feel like it's not about the players on the team. It's about showing the ownership how upset you are. And I again, I'm not advocating for it, and I'm not saying it's right, but he should have never written that letter.
He should have done a lot of things, like keep the team.
Yeah.
But here's a change in plans, though. This is Maggie not advocating violence. Usually she's the, Filipowski, true. Run that kid over.
Yeah.
So we've turned a new leaf.
Listen, I'm maturing.
Yeah. Holding back.
I'm growing up. Yeah. This is a new me. I'm mellowing out.
Antonio Pierce, a little vague about his QB situation after Sunday's embarrassing home loss to the Panthers, but Gardner Minshew will reportedly keep the job with the team, never really considering a move to Aiden O'Connell. Davante Adams told Up and Adams on FanDuel TV yesterday, the starter needs to know he has job security.
It's like having a girlfriend and you let her know, you make her feel like every day she could be out the door. Like that's not the feeling that she wants. And I don't think you're going to get the best product out of your girl if she's thinking that she's going to get kicked to the curb every single day.
What?
So. Yeah, you got to be nice. You got to let Gardner Minshew know that he's got some room to keep the job.
So why didn't he create this whole thing himself?
Antonio Pierce?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I dislike this from Antonio Pierce so much because, first of all, you can't come in. Okay, you lose in embarrassing fashion to the Carolina Panthers, who did you not know they were making a quarterback change? Everyone else knew, but apparently you didn't know. So you lose and you're trying to send a message that says, hey, guys were making business decisions at the end of the game. Now we're going to make business decisions. And then 24 hours later, you're like, nah, everyone's staying the same. These are so empty. It's an empty threat. Unless there's going to be someone else we see that gets disciplined or something like that, you're going to stick with the same. It's not that Gardner Minshew was making business decisions, but you're not. What are you actually changing anything? This is boy who cried wolf.
I want to say one thing. I know maybe, I don't know if he has like kind of experience. Antonio Pierce with girlfriends, but I know every girlfriend I had definitely wanted to make sure I knew I could be out the door any second. They did not listen to this Antonio Foreman, Andre. They did not listen to this Antonio Pierce. No, they were very quick to be like, hey, one more step and you're out, buddy.
It's funny how the power dynamic just shifts from couple to couple.
There you go.
Yeah. Speaking of those business decisions, Devontae had his own thoughts on those as well.
There were some guys out there that, you know, they were kind of just trying to see another day. That's really not what the game is about. And if you look at the tape, you know, across the whole game, it wasn't really just late in the game. You know, it was multiple times throughout the 3 hours we were out there where people were maybe not, you know, putting an extra hit on somebody, not, you know, putting that extra block or not straining a little bit more just so that we can have it look the way we wanted to on tape.
Man, I've forgotten the names already, but there are a couple of dudes, defensive backs, who played less tough than I would have played had you just given me a helmet and went on the field. I mean, just watching guys run past them, like, you know what? I'm not going to get involved in that. It was startling.
This is a disaster for Pierce because it's not that he's a bad coach. It's just, I don't think anyone believes that he's like Mr. X's and O's savant coach. But
right.
Not that he's bad, but it's not that, you know, I don't know if he has the genius tag yet. Maybe he'll get there. But he's supposed to be the vibes guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be the galvanizing the locker room dude. That's how you go from interim coach to head coach. And you have guys making business decisions in week three?
Well, I told you guys this offseason, you took this whole Antonio Pierce thing too seriously because you could talk about the coach all you want. The problems are organizational, and we all know it. We all know it's the ownership group.
Do you think Mark Davis is telling guys it's all right, you can loaf?
I'm just saying, you could bring in Bill Belichick there. It ain't going to fix the problem.
I wish I agreed with Perloff in the offseason. He was so right about this. Like,
because you have a big Pierce. Pierce might be a great coach, but this is an impossible situation.
Yeah, there's something poisonous about that Raider organization. Just you put on that black and silver and you don't want to tackle people. You're lazy. I mean, they've had a lazy, undisciplined team for like 25 years. Like, it doesn't matter the coach, doesn't matter who's running the team. If you wanted to say, what's the scouting report on the Raiders? It'd be the same scouting report every year, regardless of who the players are. And, like, I you're right. Like, you can't just put this on Pierce, and I was foolish to think that he could come in and kick some behinds and get their act together. I don't think he can.
Man, maybe they need to get out of Vegas and get to a place that's a little less fun.
Like Oakland?
Well,
it's actually a good time as long as you don't play for the A's.
Yeah, things weren't going great over there either.
Caitlin Clark and the Fever need to win tonight to extend their season. Game 2 in Connecticut, 7:30 Eastern. Clark said yesterday her right eye is fine after getting poked during Sunday's loss. The Aces knocked out the Storm last night, 83-76 in their Game 2, and the Liberty swept the Dream, 91-82. Those two play in the semis starting Sunday in Brooklyn. And UNLV QB Matt Sluka says he is done playing for the program. He'll redshirt, go elsewhere for next season. Sluka says certain promises from his recruitment were not met and will not come through at all. There are other reports, though, that maybe he just got a better offer to go somewhere else for 2025. UNLV right now 3-0, two nice wins in contention for a playoff spot at the moment. Guys, back to you.
Wow, that's exciting. All right.
What are we ever going to find out of like what really happened here?
I don't think it's... I think if he's making a business decision, I know this sounds anti-team, but like, what does college football expect? I mean, this guy should look out for himself. That's what I might do.
Well, I do think, though, there is... and it's hard to say it because no one keeps up their end of the bargain. But in the simplest of terms, if he got everything that he agreed to take from them, and in the middle of September he goes, somebody else has something better for me for next year, I'm leaving, that's not great. That's not the same thing as him putting his foot down and going, hey, you told me you were going to give me this and you didn't, and you say you're not going to give it to me, so I'm leaving.
Yeah, but that young man sitting there watching a coaches get $25 million buyout to leave whenever they want for whatever reason, seeing ADs getting $3 million contracts leave whatever they want for whatever reason, why should college players who actually have to take the punishment not get what they can when they can?
Yeah, I would just like everything to be like last a year. Like I think you can. I think they all could agree to leave or to last 1 year together.
See,
I think I'm asking too much.
I think at the crux of this is, did they actually come through with the commitment they said? Did UNLV actually make good on the commitment they said? Or did Sluka play so well that he went back to them and said, hey, yesterday's price is not today's price because I'm playing really well? And they said, no, we signed a contract. And he said, all right, then I'm going to redshirt and I'm going to keep my last year of eligibility. And next year I'll be playing for Oregon and I'm going to make, you know, four times as much or what have you. Like, I want to know that. I think that detail is important for the story.
You're totally right, Maggie. But the reality is, like, this is his chance to cash in. And probably at a much higher level than what he's getting at UNLV. So and you're right, in principle, no, of course he should not do this. But can you blame him? I mean, this is not, there's not a long shelf life. I don't think he's a pro prospect as far as I know.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
Now, I knew of his existence before today, so I'll connect this dot for you. His head coach at Holy Cross, Bob Chesney, is now the head coach at James Madison, who just got all that money to score 70 in North Carolina. So is any of that money getting redirected to Matt Sluka to be the JMU QB?
Oh, they're spending that Tar Heel money already.
Yeah. Mac Brown's like, great. We have them on our schedule there again, this Sluka kid. All right. Coming up next, more of your calls. The Great Debate, best freshman season in college football history. You can weigh in 855-212-4227. That's next, Maggie and Perloff Show. Maggie and Perloff Show, Great Debate Wednesday. Greatest freshman season in college football history. I went with the great Herschel Walker. Maggie went Trevor Lawrence, Nico, Johnny Football. EJ went with all day Adrian Peterson. And Andrew Bogish went with Michael Crabtree. Let's go to the phone lines. Mike in Syracuse. Who do you got? Greatest freshman season in college football history.
Well, Mike from Syracuse is going to give you another Mike from Syracuse. That's Mike Hart, Michigan running back.
Mike Hart. What on earth happened to that dude?
He's coaching now someplace.
Wasn't he? I don't understand. That is a guy who I was guaranteed was going to be a star. And I remember he had one great year, right? Did he do anything? Did he even make the NFL?
Yeah, he was with the Colts for a while. But he had so many carries for Michigan all 4 years that he just got beat up because he was basically a small guy.
Wow, that's interesting. Thank you, Mike. If you're too good as a freshman, you take too many carries. Let's go to Big Dave. Dave, you know college football very well. Greatest freshman season in college football history.
Can't believe that no one has opened the book of Manning. What about the great Peyton Manning? His freshman year, he was thrust into the lineup. went 89 for 144, threw for 1,200 yards. First team, all SEC, had some big wins, huge win over Alabama that year. So,
now, wait, what's the legend? And Maggie, you might know this too. Did he beat out Todd Helton? What was Todd Helton's role in all this? Was it, Todd Helton was a.
Not sure.
They were. Was that a. Like, he took over. Sorry, I'm screwing up this story.
You're right. It was Helton, but it was. Was it also. Was there Brandon Stewart? There were a couple guys who were on that roster.
But 1,200 yards, Dave, that's not going to make. That's not going to win the debate.
Well, he was a freshman. He won. Well, he was. Okay. How many freshman quarterbacks did he. Has come into the SEC and made first team all conference?
Seven.
But listen. Time out. You said something a while ago that just totally derailed my train of thought, McLevin, and I'm going to address it right now.
Go ahead.
The Sluka deal, okay, the NIL dispute and all that. You made the comment, well, can you really blame him, you know, for taking more money? Let me lay this scenario on you. The air conditioner goes out in your apartment, okay?
Yep.
It's 120 degrees tomorrow. You contact three contractors. You settle on one. He admits, I'll absolutely be there tomorrow, man. You can count on me. In the meantime, in the 8-hour period, someone else says, look, dude, I'll give you an extra $500 if you'll be at my place tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there with your kids and your wife in an apartment that's 220 degrees. Can you really blame him?
Yeah, did he sign a contract with you, like a ironclad contract to play football at UNLV?
I don't know.
He didn't. Because college football doesn't have contracts, Dave.
You
have a scholarship.
What about honoring your commitment?
What about you pay the players what they deserve?
You are exactly what is wrong with the sports world right now, McLovin. It is you. It is you. It's this type. I don't understand. Where did it go wrong, McLovin?
Wait, you want to go back to basically getting like the coach gets $60 million, the AD gets $9 million a year, the player gets concussions, and maybe he gets $300 under the table. That's what you want, Dave?
Who's making them play?
They should be getting paid. I watch college football. There's 7 hours of commercials. And there's an Apple commercial. Why is this guy not getting that money? Why is it going to some administrator in college, Dave?
Did he agree to an NIL deal?
I haven't seen the paperwork.
You don't know that he did not. You're speculating on your behalf.
It's an NIL deal. If it's such a big deal, then these players should be signing contracts for the team.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean,
100%.
I thought you would.
100%. I agree. But it's all about honoring your commitment, which has been left by the wayside. In sports and pretty much everything else in this country right now. That's the problem, and you are the poster child.
I'll take it, Dave. Thank you for the call, Dave. Maggie,
MVP
by the way,
call from Dave.
That must have hit home because the air conditioning guy not showing up. Maggie, you know what that's all about.
Yeah, ours was the hot water heater guy. That was dire either way. But Big Dave, one of our great friends of this show, calling up to say that Perloff is everything wrong.
Yeah, about we should cut
college
that
football. I think and society. I think he called you the poster child for both, Pearl, and like no lies.
I gotta be honest. I'm feeling some great pride in that. I think underneath it all, Dave had a touch of compassion and love with that statement.
No.
I think he appreciates that. No,
I think that he's seen the true colors of McLovin, and he's appalled.
Not two colors. I have not changed. Trust me. And Dave knows that very well. There is nothing. No true colors to be revealed.
But that's why I said this. Sluka story.
Yeah.
Sluka. Sorry. We need the details of this very much matter.
There's only one UNLV quarterback I care about. Two: Randall Cunningham and Kenny Mayne. Other than that, I don't want to hear about it. All right, maybe we'll dive into that tomorrow. Thank you to Nico, EJ, Andrew Bogish, Maggie from home.
Andrew Kaplan.
See you tomorrow.